The following Dharma talk was recorded in March 2013 in St. Louis, Missouri. It is one of five recordings from the retreat called Dana, Sila, and Bhavana, A Gradual Path of Awakening, taught by Bridget Rollins and John Yaffe. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. The retreat's teachers, Bridget and John, are co-leaders of the St. Louis Insight Meditation Group. More information about them can be found at www.dharmastl.org.
During the retreat, we have been reflecting on these three pillars of practice: Dana, the practice of generosity; Sila, the practice of wholesome conduct, ethical conduct; and the third pillar is Bhavana, which sometimes gets translated as meditation, but really it's more apt to call it mental development. And the importance of this mental development can't be stated enough. It's kind of, this is where the action is. And I'd like to read an excerpt from the Dhammapada. That's a collection of pithy sayings from the Buddha. And it's kind of like he encapsulated, or his students kind of pulled together these very concise, pithy statements that encapsulated the practice. So here's from the Dhammapada. Mind is the forerunner of all things. If one speaks or acts with an impure mind, that is, from an unwholesome mental state, suffering follows, like the wheel that follows the foot of the ox. Mind is the forerunner of all things. If one speaks or acts with a pure mind, translate, from a wholesome mental state, happiness follows, like the shadow that never leaves. So, just noticing the image, if one speaks or acts from a wholesome, an unwholesome mental state, suffering follows, like the wheel that an ox, a beast of burden, is dragging behind it. And if one speaks or acts from a wholesome mental state, that happiness follows, as light as a shadow. And I, you know, you only see a shadow if there's light. If you're outdoors, you only see your shadow if there's light from the sun. If you're indoors, you know, whatever light is there. And so in the light of wisdom, we know what are the wholesome mental states, and we speak and act out of them, and we enjoy happiness. So I like to use the image of the garden, and that in this garden, so for mental cultivation, in this garden plot, there are seeds in the ground. And some of those seeds are wholesome, and some of them are unwholesome. So we have the wholesome seeds of fruits and vegetables and flowers. And then we have unwholesome seeds of weeds, poisonous plants. And when we talk about bhavana, mental development, this is about nurturing, creating the conditions in this ground for those wholesome seeds to sprout and bear fruit, or to flower. And creating the conditions in the ground of our garden plot that will prevent the unwholesome seeds from getting any nourishment to sprout up. Now, we're talking then in this metaphor about how do we help the wholesome seeds to grow and the unwholesome seeds to remain dormant. So I'd like to point this out. At one point in my practice, and you will find images of uproot the defilements, you know, get rid of them, burn them, destroy. Search and destroy. And that might be a way of understanding it, but what that did for me was create a lot of aversion and a lot of fear, you know, that I wouldn't be able to get rid of this. And so any time a weed would, you know, poke itself up, there'd be all this alarm in the system. Oh, no! And I did not find that helpful. What I have found helpful is to understand that, you know, I might not be able to get rid of that seed. And in fact, maybe that we don't ever get rid of the seed, but that through my skillful effort, and the Buddha has some wonderful things to say about skillful, wise effort, but through wise effort, it's not that that seed is going to go away or that weed, you know, won't be there, but that my practice is to withdraw nourishment from it. And so rather than my efforts being this trying to root up, and it's interesting, isn't it? You know, in parenting, I am not a parent, but I have heard that one way to extinguish a negative behavior is to don't pay attention to it. You know, kind of catch when the kid's being good or acting in ways that are beneficial to the child and pay attention to that. So rather than, you know, focusing on the weed, on the unwholesome mental state and resisting, struggling, fighting, judging myself for it, I do find it much more effective simply to turn the attention away, drop it as soon as I can, redirect. So I offer that to you. And Buddha, wise gardener that he was, said that when you get in your garden, there are four wise efforts, four ways that you want to direct your energy when you're talking or when you're working with mental states. So the four are: restrain the arising of unarisen, unwholesome states. Don't worry if this you get confused with this. We'll make it clear. Restrain the arising of unarisen wholesome state, unwholesome mental states. Abandon unwholesome states that have arisen. That's probably, you have a lot of experience with that. Develop unarisen wholesome states. And then develop unarisen wholesome states and then maintain wholesome states that have arisen. So basically what he's saying, you know, withdraw nourishment from the unwholesome, try to prevent them, abandon them, and then wholesome, do everything you can to make it grow. So when we are practicing and he calls these the four great efforts, the maha efforts, worthy. When we're restraining the arising of unarisen wholesome mental states, and in this he says, practice what is called guarding the sense gates. So here's how suffering happens. Some sensory organ, the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, and the mind, makes a connection. The organ makes a connection with the sense object. So it's some sight we're seeing, or flavor, sound, you know, all of those that fit. when they come together, what happens is we will experience it as pleasant, unpleasant, or neither of those. In a mind that is not awake and present, there will automatically be a grasping at the pleasant, a pushing away from the unpleasant, and a spacing out, zoning out, ignoring, turning away from the neutral. And that initial grasping or pushing away, again, if the mind's not awake, then what happens is that energy becomes a clinging, an attachment. And that results now in someone who wants something or doesn't want something or just is out to lunch. And therein is suffering. So he's saying, and notice, this is actually the first three foundations of mindfulness. The body is the body, and everything in it is the sense organ. And the Buddha says the brain, the mind, is also a sense organ, and its sensory object is thoughts. So we have that first foundation that we have been developing. Come into the body, be aware of what's going on. And so we try to be aware of the sensory experience. Second foundation, Vedana, the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral quality. We want to be aware. And so we can prevent the arising of unarisen, unwholesome states by kind of getting more and more sensitive to that place where, you know, the pleasantness is arising, and then the tendency to then grasp. And we can insert our wedge of mindfulness and temper that so that that unarisen state of greed, hatred, delusion doesn't get a foothold. Okay, so this first great effort, we focus on this first found, on all, actually all three foundations, and it's like we're trying to get better and better. It's like, you know, when you were really potty training is a wonderful example. There was that point at which, you know, you really wanted to have the big kid pants, but, you know, you'd be out playing with your friends and suddenly your pants were wet. This is kind of going to John's story. But, you know, you keep catching it faster and faster, and then, and you've just, and, you know, we have the ability to cultivate a sensitivity to our bodies so that we heard the signal. And probably very few of us wet our pants. Unless we're on the other end of the spectrum of aging, you know, and now, you know, well, anyway. But we have that capacity to tune into the energies, the signals. So this is how we can prevent the arising of unarisen, unwholesome states. Abandon unwholesome states that have arisen. Okay. And, you know, this is probably where most of us do our practice with regards to unwholesome states. And the Buddha, even before the Buddha was enlightened, he said, before my enlightenment, I noticed that I could divide my thoughts into two categories. There were thoughts that were coming out of mental states of craving for sense desire, sense pleasure. And remember, sense pleasure, it also includes the mind, having pleasant thoughts, pleasant mental activities. Anybody get hooked on video games? Surfing the net. Yeah, the mind wants entertainment. Again, we're like that short circuit robot. Input, that's what the mind wants. And he said, so craving, I noticed craving for sense pleasure. Some of my thoughts were coming out of mental states of ill will. And some of them were coming out of mental states of cruelty. And he said, I noticed on the other hand that there were some thoughts that were arising out of mental states of what he called renunciation or restraint. There would be a sense of refraining and coming out of mental states of kindness and compassion. And he said, I could observe that when I acted out on those thoughts that were rooted in sense, desire, ill will, and cruelty, I suffered and others suffered. When I acted out of those mental states that were of renunciation, or we might say restraint, kindness, and compassion, my heart was free and others didn't suffer. And, that was even before his enlightenment. He could just kind of see how our mental states feed into suffering. And so abandoning unwholesome states, really, there are many unwholesome states, but, we would probably do well during a day just to notice where the craving, grasping is, where the pushing away aversion, which might either be ill will or could be cruelty. Just to notice that, and when that happens, abandon that. Let go of it. Don't go there. It's trying to suck us in, but we say no thank you and we pull back. So that's abandoning unwholesome states. Develop unarisen wholesome states. So again, bhavana is mental development. And that's what you've been doing all weekend, and I know for all of you even before you got to the weekend, but retreats are a time where we kind of create an environment, a container that allows us to practice these efforts on perhaps a deeper level than we usually do. So we're trying to what we're trying to do is create the optimum environment for the mind to awaken, for wisdom to wake up this mind that's caught in a trance of ignorance. And, basically we do that through our mindfulness. And when the Buddha talks about developing unarisen wholesome states, in one of the suttas, he then goes on to name seven wholesome mental states that are present in a mind that's awake. And these are known as the factors of awakening. And mindfulness is the mental factor that kind of holds it all, guides it, gives us the capacity to know what the other mental states are, their presence or their absence. One way to understand mindfulness, usually we think of it as the awareness, the non-judgmental awareness, the bare attention. Tanisaro Bhikkhu says that one way you can translate the Pali word for mindfulness, sati, is remembering. And I really like that mindfulness kind of remembers what we're doing and brings us back to doing that. So when you're practicing what you would call mindfulness, and when you're right there and you're very aware, and there's a lot of wakefulness in the mind, and you're seeing moment by moment what's happening, what you'll find is that you have these other factors, and they're present in a balanced way. That some of these factors help arouse the mind, give it energy, brightness. Other factors will help calm the mind, stabilize it. And it's very important to find this balance, because a mind that has too much energy arousal we'll find it very hard to settle. A mind that's too calm then sinks into sleepiness, fatigue, or just kind of zoning out. So these factors, the first is investigation. This is a helpful antidote to sleepiness. If you're sleepy, what you might do is just let yourself be a little kid again. Kind of put on a beginner's mind. So, for 30 minutes we've been watching the breath. And the mind is making up a story. Well, I know what breath is like. I mean, this is so boring. There's nothing new here, nothing to titillate and, you know, kind of no juice. Jack Kornfield says, we could do this, pinch your nose with your fingers and close your mouth. And just watch how interesting breath gets in a few moments. And the truth of the matter is that whatever's happening in this moment, the breath that's happening in this moment, is a brand new thing. Never happened before. Never will happen again. So if we can, we can brighten the mind, arouse it, by just letting ourselves get curious and interested. It can be like a little kid's mind. You know, when we were children, everything was new, and it's like, how does that work? How does that work? And we would take things apart to see how they work, you know, or we just watch and just really watch whatever it was, you know, a toy, and it was doing its thing, and we really watched to just see how it works. We can bring that same quality to our minds and really watch, how does this all work? Now, if we've got a lot of judgment in the mind, it's going to be, oh, this is bad. Oh, I shouldn't be in my mind. But if we're just really curious, there's no push or pull in there. It's just like the scientist saying, interesting phenomena. You know, and the scientist doesn't get in there and say, oh, that's bad. That, well, that bug shouldn't be doing that. No, it just says, oh, look, this is how that bug climbs up the stalk, and this is how the legs move. And so it's this curiosity, this interest, a beginner's mind that is simply kind of, you know, wanting to know. Now, it can also be helpful to bring some energy. And sometimes that energy when we're sinking is to take a deep breath, sit up a little straighter, maybe open the eyes to let light in. Or we can just mentally, you know, kind of rededicate ourselves to, you know, I'm going to bring whatever energy is needed to be right here and be present. That energy can be the coming back, aiming and sustaining the attention. Sometimes that energy is courageous because what we've aimed and sustained the attention on is difficult. And we cultivate the ability to be with it. In a mind that is awake, you will find joy. And, you know, it's not giddy exuberance, but it's that the interest, the energy that we have just kind of has this happy, joyful quality to it. And, you know, one way we can just even invite that into the system, and Thich Nhat Hanh is like the master of this, is to smile. You know, I'm going to have to find Wes Nisker has a song, and it might be a parody. There was a song about smile when you're happy, da 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 da. But he does this whole thing, and he says, make your thin grin like the Buddha. Make your grin thin like the Buddha. But anyway, so, you know, it's like fake it till you make it. You're not feeling very happy, joyful. But it's amazing what bringing the body into an upright position, just bringing the sense of a smile to the face. Bring a sense of smile into the heart. Bring a sense of smile into the eyes, into the belly. And just notice how that shifts the energy. You're cultivating that seed of joy. Now, when a mind has these qualities that have aroused it, it's much easier for this mind to settle, and tranquility can arise in this kind of mind. And so there can be a calming of mind here. When, you know, when we're happy, there's a sense of contentment, you know, and when we're content, we're happy. So there's this tranquility factor that is present in a mind that is awake. And where there is this tranquility that still has energy and interest and a little bit of smile, the mind is more likely to concentrate. And so the factor of concentration We're kind of setting up the ground for this concentration and the ability of mind to focus, and to focus very clearly, presently, and to focus very deeply. And the last factor that arises in a mind that's awake, not the last two arise, but the last one that we would want to acknowledge is the mental quality of, or the mental state of equanimity. So a mind that is awake is equanimous. And I would like to just, the Buddha talked about cultivating this mental state of equanimity. And I just love this. And he talked to his son. His son was a monk. And he said, "Rahula, develop meditation, or we might say mental development, in tune with earth. For when you are developing meditation in tune with earth, agreeable and disagreeable sensory impressions that have arisen will not stay in charge of your mind." And the Buddha gets real earthy, so excuse his language. "Just as when people throw what is clean or unclean on the earth, feces, urine, saliva, pus, or blood." And what's your reaction when you hear that? My reaction is, blah! Here's what he says. "The earth is not horrified, humiliated, or disgusted by it. In the same way, when you are developing meditation in tune with earth, agreeable and disagreeable sensory impressions that have arisen will not stay in charge of your mind." I love that. Will not stay in charge of your mind. And where do we spend most of our lives? With those mental states in charge of our minds. So again, bhavana, mental development. And so he gave the earth as a guide, an image, something to emulate. And he actually went through the four elements. He said, just as people wash clean and unclean things in water, and he keeps repeating those yucky things, and he says, and the water's not horrified, or burn clean and unclean things in fire. Fire's not horrified, it just burns it all up. The wind blows on clean and unclean things, and it's not going, blah, when it gets to the feces, urine, pus, and blood. It just... And so, the quality of equanimity... My first teacher was Shinzen Young, and he had this mantra that he would say. And the very first retreat I went on, the thing that I remember from Shinzen Young, and he kind of treated them like the two pillars of practice. Mindfulness and equanimity. Mindfulness and equanimity. Mindfulness and equanimity. I didn't hear about these other factors of awakening until way down the line, but it was beautiful. He's a mathematician. He's kind of a nerd. He's wonderful. He puts things into logarithms. He's got the whole path in a logarithm. But he said, you'll notice your suffering quotient, you know, to the extent that there is mindfulness and equanimity, mindfulness quotient will go down. To the extent that there's no mindfulness, no equanimity, your suffering quotient will go up. So this lovely, lovely state of equanimity. And again, these are mental states that just naturally arise as our minds become more skilled, as they become more awake. So they're kind of flowers that bloom, and they are factors that can be cultivated. So we can invite these states. With mindfulness, you know, as we're practicing, we can just kind of know, do I need a little bit more arousing? Do I need to put on a happy face? Fake it till you make it. Do I need a little more calming? Do I need to invite tranquility, concentration, equanimity in? So we're always kind of, you know, This is an art, not a science. It's an art, not a science. And, you know, science gives you a cookbook and you follow it all and you get the cake. Art, you know, you put a little of this in, you put a little of that in, you stir it around, you bake it, you taste it and say, whoops, nope, that didn't work. And you just keep on in this process of exploration. So this is developing unarisen wholesome states. And really, in the sutta, he was focusing on the factors of awakening, but take any skillful, wholesome mental state that you can think of and just help it to arise. And there are many practices. You know, John led us through the formal meditation practice of metta. There are formal meditation practices around many of the of these states. And so it's like it's not there now, but I can do something to help. You know, I can water it, fertilize it, pull up the weeds around it, cut back the bushes so the sun can get to it. And so there are things that I can do to help it arise in the future. And then his last great effort is maintain wholesome states that have arisen. So he says, don't let them fade away. Bring them to greater growth. So whenever a thought that is aligned with a wholesome mental state comes up, focus on it. Pay attention to it. Feed it. Give it more energy. Act on it. Nourish it like a precious seedling, you know, that's poked its head up above the ground, and now you really want to help it to grow. I was on a, I'm in a program called Integrated Study and Practice Program out at the Berry Center for Buddhist Studies in Massachusetts. And if you ever can, you know, spare 4 weeks out of your year, it is a wonderful program. There was a woman in the program who was just such a beautiful, honest person, and especially honest about the unwholesome states that she dealt with. And she came back to our lesson. We had a go around at the beginning to kind of check in, and she said, I just want to share with you that I went into my favorite coffee shop. And, you know, you get so many drinks and then you get one free. And she said, I had my coupon out and I was going to get myself a free latte. And she said, and all of a sudden I found myself turning to the person behind me and saying, would you like a free latte? And she said, I don't know where that came from. I do. It came from her practice. Because she was, you know, it was like she'd been watering and fertilizing that seed by, you know, acting as if she was generous. You know, and she'd be the first person to say, I'm not a generous person. But she had been practicing in the way the Buddha taught. And here's the thing. Now, this might have been happening quickly, but I'm sure what happened was the thought came up, you know, I could give my ticket away. And that's coming out of a wholesome state of generosity. And what she did was she jumped on it and she embodied it in her words and actions. And here it comes. This is just setting up the likelihood that this kind of generosity will arise again. So, you know, if you have a generous thought, you know, if you struggle with compulsion and addiction and the thought comes up as you're grabbing for whatever it is that feeds your addiction, and you have a thought of renunciation, of restraint, and you pull back and you say, Ma, I'm going to practice renunciation. I'm going to practice restraint. And then let yourself feel the freedom of that. It's much more likely that that will occur in the future. This is karma. Whatever we do in the present moment, if whatever we're doing, saying, if we're embodying in our actions something wholesome, what we're doing is we are cultivating that seed, and it's more likely that it's going to bear fruit. So there are four wholesome states that are called Brahma Viharas. And you may be familiar with these, but just to remember, Brahma Vihara, Brahma means divine, holy. Vihara just means house, but we can say abiding. And there are four mental states that are divine abidings, heavenly abodes, that it's as if we are living in a heaven realm, in a deva realm. They are so closely aligned with liberation that we experience this beautiful heart-opening quality of freedom. And, you know, those states are metta, which can be called loving-kindness or goodwill. Karuna, which is compassion. Appreciative joy or empathetic joy, which is when we're happy at the good fortune of another. And equanimity. We've visited that before, but within the quality of heart, that's when love is extended without attachment, without grasping, without conditions. And actually, I heard this from John, and I love to weave it in when I talk about this now, but he kind of contemplated that all of these are about a heart that is filled with love, or a heart that's opening with love. So, you know, just the basic quality that the heart has to wish for the well-being of another person. And when the heart is in the presence of suffering, you know, when a heart that loves, when love is in the presence of suffering, what naturally arises is compassion. When a heart that's full of love meets someone's good fortune, joy comes up. You're just so happy for that person. And as I said, equanimity is just love's ability to be there for anyone, everyone. So what's really important in terms of bhavana is to remember that, yes, there are formal practices of this mental development. And, you know, formal meditation, it's very important to give ourselves that time of formal meditation. You know, a time and a place every day, or as many days as possible, where we intentionally focus on this practice, the practice of insight. Thich Nhat Hanh, when he's talking about mindfulness, he says, you should do an hour a day. And he says, an hour a day is not enough. What's enough? 24/7, 365. Of course, we do sleep in there, and I'm not quite sure how to sleep mindfully. You can go to sleep mindfully, wake up mindfully. But here's the thing. In the Satipatthana Sutta, and actually the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha said, began with a guarantee. He said, if you practice in this way, you are sure to gain enlightenment, either in this time, or you'll just return one more time. The key here is in this way. And he said, you know, you can do it in 7 weeks. Or maybe it was 7 days. Was it 7 days? It came down to 7 days. Yeah. 7 years. There you go. You know, if you really, really do exactly what I say 24/7 for 7 days, you'll either attain complete liberation or you're only going to be a once returner. You know, you don't have to go around this cycle of samsara one more time. And he started with 7 years, and then he said, oh, wait a minute, come to think of it, it probably only takes 7 months. Well, you know, maybe only 7 weeks. You know, doggone it, it's like, wait, there's more. Yeah, 7 days will do it, folks. But the instructions say a meditator abides contemplating. A meditator dwells contemplating. A meditator lives engaged in this contemplation. And therein lies the rub, you know, that none of us have probably gained the strength of practice for this to be that kind of continuous practice. But what this says is, while the formal meditation is very important, because it's like going to the gym, you know, and just doing the strength training, the flexibility, the endurance, this is something that is meant to be lived. And so at each moment of life, we can be guarding the sense gates and just watching for those unarisen, unwholesome states that want to come up, and abandon them or restrain ourselves from acting out on them. We can notice when we're caught in those unwholesome states and abandon them. We can exert our energy to develop those wholesome states that aren't manifesting themselves in our lives. And whenever a wholesome state arises, we can jump on it and ride it for all it's worth, and feed it and nourish it and pet it and cuddle it and, you know, make it be out in our lives in the world. So this is bhavana. This is mental development. This is the way to direct our efforts if we want to come to a cessation of suffering. And, you know, my wish for all of us, one of the metta phrases that I like to use sometimes is, you know, may all beings come to the end of suffering in this very lifetime. So that's my wish for all of us.